Welcome to Global Math Department, everyone. We are so excited that you are here this evening. My name is Jessica, and I will be your host this evening. Tonight, we're going to hear from Kristen Umland about the Illustrate the Math new, amazing new free middle school math curriculum that has been created and just released recently for everyone to check out. So right now, can you take a chance and take some time to introduce yourself into the chat window. Tell us what you teach, where you teach, and share your Twitter handle so we can make more connections as math teachers.
Hey, Jen. Houston, how are things going there?
Oh, yeah, Jonathan.
Oh my gosh.
I've seen your posts on Facebook. I can't even imagine. Fine enough to be here. I guess that's a good point. All right. Well, thank you everyone again for joining us. Before I turn it over and introduce or turn it over to our speaker, let me just give a little background about how our meetings work. They are recorded every Tuesday and are available typically, I say, within 24 hours after the meeting ends. So to view the recording or share it with a colleague or share it with your math department or someone in your district, then you would just come back to the same URL you came to this evening. The Global Math community prides itself on being friendly and supportive, so the chat room window is available for your topical and general conversation throughout the meeting. I will take time to catch your questions for our presenter, so you don't need to worry about that they will miss it during the chatter. Our speaker tonight is Kristen Umland, all about illustrative math, and Kristen, it is all yours.
Okay, great. Well, it's really a pleasure for me to be here. I want to thank you all for coming and spending some of your Tuesday evening with me. I'm going to be talking about the work that we've been doing at IM over the last year and a half. Hopefully it'll be interesting to you. I want to sort of just let you know that there's more than I can say in an hour about the curriculum. So we're going to pick a few sort of key points. And sort of do a deep dive on some of those. And then I'll point out at the end a few sort of things you might want to go off and explore on your own when you have more time. So the first thing I want to mention is that what we've built is a complete open education resource 6-8 math curriculum. And it's been a partnership between IM and Open Up Resources. So if you want to go to see the materials, they're at im.openupresources.org. That's where the curriculum lives. You do need to set up an account to see the teacher materials, but student and family materials are completely open, no login required. So that's sort of the high level. And I want to sort of give the summary view of what we made. It's really a comprehensive, problem-based, openly licensed, standards-aligned, well, you can read this, core mathematics curriculum for 6-7-8 with tools for teachers to support diverse learners. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to sort of pick this apart a little bit. We're not going to be able to address every single one of these pieces. But one of the things I want to call out here is this idea of this being really a problem-based curriculum. It's really meant to provide students with the maximum opportunity to be doing mathematics and talking about mathematics during their classroom time. One of the things that's been really important about the process is that we started out with some really high level principles. And I want to talk about each of these briefly. One of the big things, of course, is that we wanted to make sure that we could balance the development of concepts, procedural fluency, and opportunities for students to apply mathematics. And we're going to see a little bit later some of the structures that we put into place to help that balance happen. Of course, each of those aspects of mathematical proficiency require different kinds of activities and different timelines. So we'll talk a little bit about that balance. We'll talk also about how we worked to make the mathematical experience that students were having a coherent experience, and lots of different ways we sort of came at that problem. A big thing, we're going to really spend more time than what I'm going to mention here about focus, but one of the things we did is we really held our own feet to the fire to not include things that were beyond the standards. And this was very hard. Everybody has their favorite topic. But what we decided was really important is that we didn't put everybody's favorite topic in. We just put what really had to happen. And that allows more space for teachers to add favorite topics or for materials to be used in places where the standards might include more topics. And to really, really spend time focusing on the most important ideas at each grade level. And this takes a lot of discipline. And we, you know, we often would come to the conclusion that we had to remove some of our favorites material. But in the end, I think it meant that these materials were a lot more manageable for teachers. Another thing that we're not going to be able to spend a ton of time talking about right now, but we'll sort of make some passing remarks about as we go, is that we really think that these materials should help teachers get, you know, learn about mathematics, learn about teaching, provide opportunities for them to talk with each other about teaching and learning. And to every extent possible, we tried to make the materials supportive of teacher professional learning. So anyway, these are some of the sort of high level guiding principles. And of course, the real question is, so these are nice things to say, they're very high level. And it's not so easy to figure out how you turn these principles into actual concrete lesson plans. So one of the things that we're going to look at is sort of how we did that. We're going to sort of start at a high level and dive down very specifically to a few things and then sort of zoom back out. Okay, so one of the basic structural principles that we used for building our materials was this idea that at the beginning, students needed an entry point. We needed to attend explicitly to that entry point. If we don't give them that entry point, then the deep study of concepts and procedures that we want to get them involved in really can't happen. So there's this idea of a low floor, high ceiling task, but I think this is an idea that can be sort of brought to many different levels of a curriculum. And we're going to look at this a little bit. We also want to make sure that students have lots of opportunities to consolidate and apply the mathematics they learn. So this cycle of getting started, making sure everybody has access, really getting down to the nitty-gritty details and studying things in depth, and then pulling back, making sure that those ideas can be used productively is a really important guiding principle for how we build the materials. Specifically, we think about this playing out at many different levels. So I kind of like to think of it as there's sort of a fractal structure to the curriculum. At the unit level, we make sure that the first lesson or maybe two lessons, maybe three lessons are introductory lessons. We're not trying to teach all the vocabulary and get to all of the things. We're really trying to open things up, invite students in, build on prior knowledge, and that sort of a thing. And then there's a sequence of instructional lessons and a culminating lesson. We see it at the lesson level and the activity level, and we're going to look at each of these levels in turn. So let's think a little bit about the structure of a unit. This sort of cycle of introducing things, developing concepts, making connections, working toward mastery, and applying their mathematics at the end of the unit. We see that doesn't actually always happen just one cycle in a unit. Sometimes there's more than one cycle in a unit. So for example, we see this cycle happen twice in the first geometry unit in grade 6, because students talk about area and then they talk about surface area, and there's sort of a mini cycle around each of those. You'll notice in this diagram, there's also opportunities for students to work towards fluency throughout. And that happens at many different levels. It'll happen in some of the warm-ups that we'll be talking about, in the practice problems, in an embedded practice for the work of the unit. And then we also think that students, they don't just sort of walk in one day and apply mathematics to a juicy high-level problem. We want to make sure that we give them ample opportunity to develop the component skills for modeling. So they have lots of opportunities to do that throughout the unit. And each unit is bookended by a diagnostic assessment in the beginning and a summative assessment at the end. And long units sometimes have a mid-unit assessment just because it's there's too much to put if it's just one final one. So, okay, so this is kind of the structure of a unit. And then at the lesson plan level, we see sort of a similar structure. Every lesson starts with a warm-up. In principle, you know, hopefully that can take 5 or 10 minutes. Then there's the sort of the meaty activities of the day. There's an opportunity for synthesis. There's a lesson summary. Actually, that shouldn't say lesson summary anymore. We're calling it lesson synthesis. I just realized that. And then there's a cool down, which is an exit ticket sort of a thing. It's an opportunity for teachers to do some formative assessment at the end of the unit. And actually, we know some of the pilot teachers use cool downs both for that purpose and also for students to sort of check their own learning. So, you know, we had a particular purpose in mind, but lots of teachers are making sort of the materials fit their particular way of thinking about sort of the lesson and how it should play out. Anyway, so that's the structure of the lesson. So what we're going to spend a little more deep dive into is a particular warm-up type. Let's just go back for a sec. The warm-up, classroom activities, and cool-down. Warm-ups, classroom activities, and cool-downs are all activity types. It's just we give the first and last one special names because they have a special role in the lesson. But a warm-up, all activities have a launch, work time, and a synthesis. And we use, we've included some particular structures and routines around for warm-ups. And one of the things I just want to talk briefly about is this idea of the difference between a structure and a routine. I mean, that's not a well-defined concept, but a routine we sort of think of as a script, like thing that describes what students do and what teachers do. And they know, like, okay, it's kind of like a routine when you go to a restaurant, you know, you walk in, the hostess seats you, the server comes and takes your order or whatever. But for some warm-ups and some activities, you actually need the printed statement needs to have a particular structure. So some routines can be used all over the place, and sometimes you need the structure, the printed materials or the thing that students look at to have a particular structure. So these are all things that, like, what's printed on the page helps key that particular routine. We'll see a little bit later that some routines are independent of the particular task at hand. Okay, so first, what I want to do is, before we get into talking about number talks in particular, which is one of the things I promised, I'm going to do a little poll. Hopefully everybody can see it. This is fun. I can see everybody answering. Okay. There's 16 responses. I don't know how many people we actually have, so I'll just assume everybody's had their chance. One more. Let me just look real quick.
Yeah, we have 18 people, so it looks like everybody has responded.
Okay, cool. So I'll just close that poll. So it looks like, you know, nobody's who's never heard of a number talk came, not surprisingly, since it's featured in the description. But most people are pretty familiar with number talks. And so what I'd like us to do just for a moment is, like, everybody just take a look at what's here and think for, you know, 15 or 30 seconds about what you imagine happens when this set of prompts, not necessarily all at once, is put in front of students. Like, what's your mental picture of what students do and teachers do at this point in time? So just think briefly about that. Okay, so I'm going to show you the routine as described in our materials for number talks. I know that there are different approaches, but one of the things that we've done is sort of laid out sort of how we imagine this playing out. Of course, different people do things different ways. But what's most important with these kinds of routines is that kids and teachers, or students and teachers, really understand what's coming next, and it's done the same way every time, because that's the power of the routine, is that it's routine. So in the materials, we describe a number talk where, so that one problem is displayed at a time, students have a chance to think quietly to themselves. They signal when they have a strategy for solving it. And sometimes, you know, you can set up a signal so that they have multiple strategies. Students explain their strategies. Those explanations are recorded for everybody to see. And oftentimes, you know, we want to encourage multiple ways of solving, and so we want to capture different numbers of strategies. And one of the things that, you know, anybody who's done a number talk knows is that you can spend 20 or 30 minutes on a really juicy number talk. And so there's really a balance here. If this is just the 5 to 10 minute warm up for the day, you're going to have to be careful about how you choose what you do. Okay, so let me make sure I didn't forget to say anything about that.
So I'm going to jump in really quick since you're talking about the warm-ups. Uh-huh. I know I heard you say earlier that some of the warm-ups are tied to the lesson or the unit at hand, and some of them are not. Is that correct?
It's true that some are not tied to the lesson, especially earlier in the materials, because we had this idea that they provided an opportunity for ongoing, say, fluency practice.
Okay.
I think as our experience developing the lesson plans and our feedback from the pilot teachers happened, we felt like it was more powerful when the warm-up actually supported the particular work of the lesson. And that's one of the things that we're about to do here, is analyze what role this plays in the lesson that it's part of. Because I think a lot of people look at this number talk and they're like, hey, that's fourth grade multiplication. Why are you doing this in middle school? So we're gonna address that real quick. But before we get there, what I'd like everybody to do, I'm just putting a link to a Google Doc in the chat, and I'd like everybody to go there. I'd like everybody to look at this and say, like, what is the mathematics that this number talk addresses at a teacher level? So we're doing a teacher analysis. It's anonymous, but like there's bullets down below. And feel free to add another bullet if there isn't a spot for you, or just plus one something that somebody else writes, or however it is you'd like. All right, so people are still typing. So as people are writing in here, I'm just gonna start to sort of pull out a couple of themes that I'm seeing here. Several people talked about the distributive property or plus one that, definitely stuff around place value, benchmark, numbers and things like that, composition and decomposition of numbers, stuff around powers of 10. So a number talk like this, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. There are a lot of different ways in which you could take this number talk if you were going to sort of use it as a starting point for going more deeply into something. I'm going to move to the next slide and ask people just below to think then about, where does this go? So there's another set of bullets below. Where might this be useful for mathematical work in middle school? there's another below the list. Yeah, I love the Google Doc. I love being able to see people writing in Google Docs. Okay, so I'm just going to start to sort of talk about some of the themes that have come up here. So a lot of people like say, hey, this is definitely about the distributive property. There's stuff around equations and expressions. Definitely an algebra direction to go. Mental math strategies, number sense work. I want to really highlight this one, developing a culture where students listen to each other's ideas and hear multiple ways of doing it. This is super, I just super want to highlight that because all of our, especially our warm-up routines are intended to support that outcome. And a lot of students don't have experiences in math classrooms where that culture exists. And Ashley, sort of chime in here. One of the things that we've really strived to do in the materials is to provide lots of opportunities for students to develop their ability to explain their mathematical thinking, to listen to other people's thinking, to look for, and understand multiple ways of solving problems. And so these routines are really intended to also support that in a very explicit way. Anyway, so yes, I think all of these things are really spot on ways in which we might be able to take a number talk like this. So what I want to do is show you where it actually goes in this particular lesson. And in the lesson that it comes to, there's actually an activity in between that's about diagrams so that students have that tool if they need it. So we don't go straight from that number talk to this abstract work, but one of the things that is happening in here, well, I'll just give everybody, a few seconds, 15 seconds to look at it. So this is the student phase that comes second after this warm-up. So you'll probably notice that the first row is one of the problems from the number talk. And as a lot of people saw, there's a lot of opportunity to make connections to the distributive property. In fact, this lesson, I think, is called something about, like, it has the distributive property in the name. So this fourth grade number talk is the warm up to move students to being able to use just pulling out that distributive property in an explicit way. And one of the points I want to make right here, pause for a moment and really sort of think high level, is that elementary school, K-5, is really about arithmetic. Now, there's a whole bunch of algebraic thinking going on. And in a good elementary experience, kids are doing a ton of algebraic reasoning. In sixth grade, that's the beginning of the pivot from arithmetic, where there's implicitly a lot of algebraic structure happening, to middle school and then high school algebra. And so this pivot is super important and it needs to be done explicitly. Students need opportunities to make that connection between what they did before that just seemed like, computation, and what they're going to do coming next, which is algebra as generalized arithmetic. Okay, so this is where this goes. Let's go through a similar exercise. I didn't make in the Google Doc separate things, but if anybody wants to look at this number talk and think in the Google Doc at the bottom of where everything's written, I'll just write number talk. What's the mathematics that's here and where might it go in middle school? Because nobody's going to look at this and think this is about a fifth grade work. Like the work with parentheses is especially a fifth grade thing. Order of operations. So is there anything besides order of operations that's going on here? Integers, negative values. You can pack up operations on numbers, grouping symbols. Yes, yes, all these things. All right, so pay attention to the details. Attention to precision. Yes, absolutely. I'm going to show you where this lands in our curriculum. So the point of that warm-up is to get kids ready to think about factoring and expanding expressions involving variables. Again, there's in this particular case, I didn't show the whole activity because it didn't fit on the slide. I really wanted to sort of emphasize the connection. There's also opportunities for students to make connections to diagrams in case they need more support in making that transition. But you know, one of the things that really is important is how do you parse these algebraic expressions? And by thinking about and parsing simpler expressions with simpler numbers beforehand and sort of tying back to what you might have been doing in elementary school makes this more accessible for students. Okay, Oh, let's go to the next slide before I say that. Okay, so one of the things I just want to sort of pull out of this is that really number talks support algebraic thinking. In elementary school, it happens implicitly. In our curriculum, we try to make those connections more explicit. And it's also, it's warm-ups rather than sort of the major work of the day necessarily. So we really have seen a couple of warm-ups of number talks and how they support particular algebraic work. But in addition to that, we actually have some things we call algebra talks where we make that explicit. So the algebra talk has the same routine. It has the same structure. You have, instead of a number string, you have maybe a string of equations, or in this case, a string of systems of equations. And the idea is, especially for a lot of our algebra talks, it's really about students looking for and making use of structure and really helping them to see that structure if they don't necessarily see it the first thing. So one of the things that's interesting is we actually, we had a long debate about what's the line between a number talk and an algebra talk. And I'll tell you where we landed with that in a couple of slides. Before we make that connection, I just wanna show you one more thing, which is that number talks can also support grade level work with numbers in middle school and probably even in high school. We haven't written those yet, but I already have a bunch of ideas about what to write for that. So this same structure and the same routine can be used for grade level work with numbers, because there is some of that that's even happening in eighth grade around scientific notation. And, you know, a lot of people talk about number sense, and what they mean by that varies. Sometimes I talk about fraction number sense or decimal number sense, but we can even have like exponent number sense or scientific notation number sense. And how do we build that? And so, you know, we think this using these same structures and routines can give that sort of comfort to what's happening in order to explore mathematics, even that looks different than what it may have looked like in elementary school. Okay, so one of the things, so you'll notice all of a sudden I'm talking about math talks because we had a really long debate about whether or not, when is something a number talk, when is it an algebra talk? In fact, there's no bright line, and we said what's important here is the talk. It's not just that they're doing the math, because this is all math that they're doing in different ways, but a math talk is really about talking about the mathematical ideas, the strategies, listening to other students. And these math talks play a lot of different roles. As we've been saying, it's an invitation to the mathematics of the day. That routine allows students to focus on math and not logistics. It does help develop procedural fluency, which is a thing we want to do. It supports students explaining their thinking. And a thing that we haven't talked about yet is it's also an opportunity for students, for teachers to do some formative assessment. So in the process of listening to and recording student thinking, by making that thinking explicit, teachers can see better where students are. They can even use some of that insight into maybe grouping during the day or setting students up. You know, if one student has a really sort of like a not very sophisticated strategy, they might be paired with another student who has a more sophisticated strategy, so they can work together on the more complex work that comes later. We are planning to do math talks in our high school curriculum, which I don't know if you all know this, but we just launched the process of planning for, and we will be starting to write a high school curriculum. And we definitely are excited about taking this routine and seeing how far it makes sense to go with the number and algebra talks. All right, anything before? We're going to sort of start zooming back out. We zoomed into the math talk stuff. We're going to zoom out. Anything that anybody wants to ask before we move on? We can also come back and ask. There'll be plenty of time for questions at the end. Okay, so I'll just keep going. All right, so the warm-up routine that we just looked at is one of several different routines, and those are several, a subset of the, all of the routines that we sort of rely on regularly. And I think we sort of talked about all of this. I think it's helpful to think about what makes a good instructional routine. And one of the things that I want to highlight in this list is it's done for a mathematical purpose. I think I'm preaching to the choir here, but there are times when sort of activity for activity's sake happens in classrooms, and we always want to be thinking about what's the mathematical purpose for doing this, like why are we choosing this particular routine? It should have a particular purpose. Really matching the routine to the purpose needed for that particular moment in the lesson is really part of that art I talked about in the title of the talk. All right, so this is a list, some of them that we've already seen. We talk about think, pair, share. There's a variant of think, pair, share I'm just going to mention briefly called a stronger and clearer each time. And there's also these what, why info gaps. And we have several other mathematical language routines. We don't have time today to go into this, but we worked with Understanding Language and UL and the SCALE group. I can never remember what SCALE stands for. It's got too many letters to remember, but they're the they're language development specialists, especially for English learners at Stanford. And they helped us develop these routines that we've implemented. And teachers have been super excited about them. Some of them we bake in, like the what, why info gap is for all students, and teachers are saying all their students are benefiting. And then some of them are really meant for sort of a differentiation for English learners. But in that case, there's a whole nother multi-hour conversation to have around that, but I just kind of want to put that teaser out there. Okay, so we just talked about routines. I want to talk about some other features to note. One thing is talking about the way that we've engineered coherence across many levels. We really have thought about it at every level. What happens across a lesson? What happens across a unit? What happens across a grade? And what happens between grades? So we're just going to look at a couple of ways that we try to build coherence into materials. So this is an example, and this takes a couple, I'm just gonna give everybody 30 seconds to just try to look at this and make a little bit of sense of it before I talk about it. Okay, so what this diagram is, there's a whole bunch going on in this diagram, but let me sort of help parse it. We have the units for grade 6 on the top, grade 7 in the middle, grade 8. And you'll notice that there's sort of a middle chunk of medium green that is really meant to say, like, this is where this idea is addressed really carefully. So in sixth grade, 6-2 and 6-3, the focus of those units is about ratio and rate concepts. At the same time, there's work in 6-1, which is a geometry unit that's preparing students for the arithmetic that they're gonna need. It's sort of embedded review of arithmetic that happens in 6-1, so that when they get to that more heavy duty ratio and rate work, they're not just sort of going in cold. And then there's opportunities from 6-4 on for students to use ratio and rate contexts in new mathematical situations to continue to practice and that sort of a thing. So that's what's happening here. You'll see 7-2, 7-3, and 7-4 are the focus there is about developing proportional relationships, building on work in 7-1 on scale drawings, and then giving opportunities after for proportional relationships to be applied. And then in eighth grade, sort of dilation, similarity, and slope, which people don't always realize go together, and linear relationships are sort of happening across 8-2, 8-3, and 8-4, and there's embedded review before and opportunities to use it and apply it and practice it later. And so across the course, we really think about when are we focusing on these big ideas? How do we get students ready? How do they keep practicing and applying after? But also thinking, how does the work in 6-2 and 6-3 prepare students for 7-2, 7-3, 7-4? And how does that work prepare students for the work on linear relationships? So there's a progression across the year, as well as a progression between years, if that makes sense. Does that make sense? Any questions? There's a lot to absorb here, so I don't want to rush it. We can come back to it too. Are these coherence diagrams included on OER? People have asked for them. We do use them in some places. We haven't gotten them in all of the materials. It's a request people have made, and we haven't been able to get it there yet, but we would like to be able to do that. All right, so I think I'm going to move along here, showing other ways that we build coherence. One way we do it is through diagrams, or representations, not just diagrams, that's just one possible representation. So we have these hanger diagrams that we introduce in sixth grade, we revisit in seventh grade, and also revisit in eighth grade. Although this isn't showing a sixth, seventh, and eighth grade diagram, it's showing a sixth and two seventh diagrams because they show different things that I wanted to show. But so one of the ideas is to really think about what are the diagrams or other representations we want to use, and what are the ones we don't want to use. So let's see. Well, there's questions going on, but I'll let Ashley answer those. One of the things that we thought a lot about is how do we want to represent equations? A lot of people use scales. We decided to use hangers because in our experience, students have all hung clothes on a hanger in their closet, but most of them haven't used balance scales. We actually have like a notice and wonder where they're looking at hangers that are balanced and unbalanced to set up. There's actually a lot of physics behind these models. And so we wanted it to sort of steer as far as possible away from the complexities of that and make it as intuitive as possible. So, but these hanger diagrams, they have a limited value. So we use them very purposefully when they're needed and where they're useful. We make sure that we come back to them over the grades where they're useful. And then we move on to other diagrams later. So for example, we actually, you'll see, we have some tape diagrams, but with tape diagrams, we're not just using tape diagrams across grade levels to represent equations. We're actually using them to represent lots of different relationships between numbers. So equivalent ratio problems, percentage problems, fraction division, as well as equations. So diagrams can provide a coherent experience, not just across courses of the same topic, but across different topics. Jackie, those hanger pictures are in, there's one in, I think both in sixth and seventh grade. I'm sure we can find the link and send it to you. Okay, so this is just a sort of a bucket list of things for you all, if you're interested to look into more. I just want to mention them. We don't have time to really do a deep dive on any of them, but you may have questions. So we just saw coherence, how some ways in which we've engineered coherence across levels. There are other things we've done that we didn't really get to. We also have a bunch of our lessons are based on the five practices, for those of you who are familiar with that. It's really meant to support teachers. Like you don't, like we've done some of the anticipating and we've talked about some of the sequencing. Five practices can be used in places where we didn't suggest it, but we've tried to provide supports in places where we think a five practices structure would really be helpful. We have practice problem sets that are structured to give distributed practice. So for example, there's a practice problem set of between 4 and 6 problems at every lesson. And the first 2 or 3 are from that lesson. And then the last ones are from earlier lessons or even earlier units. So students keep coming back, especially to major work of grade. We have content specific supports for students with disabilities and English learners, not just sort of generic strategies. Like for this content, like here's where you would do a 3 reads because there's a heavy reading load, or here's where you would do a co-construct or something like that because this particular work would lend itself to this particular strategy or support. We also have extensions. We try to have one in every lesson that promote deeper thinking or have some kind of interest to students. They're opt-in, like they're there for all students. It's not like teachers don't say, okay, you're the good students, and so you get to do the extensions. All students have access. They're not just like do more of the same, but make it harder. It's really, and it's about sort of being at the grade level or seeing where grade level ideas lead without trying to sort of jump to the next thing. Because there's so much, like all the mathematics, even in sixth grade, there's so much under the surface that we never get to with just sort of the main standards. And so this is an opportunity for students to explore through. Further. So these are some things worth exploring at some point if you all have a chance to get in and look at the materials. With that, I'm just going to say, what questions should we answer? Where do you want to go from here? Jessica, do you have questions that I need to answer or was...
For the most part, they've all been answered. So those of you that are in here this evening, if you have specific questions, now's the time to toss them in the chat window.
Right. Okay. What info gap? Yeah. I wonder if we could find one quickly. And I can show it to you. Let me describe it And actually, Ashley, if you can put a link to one while I describe it, and then I can share screen. So the idea of a what, why info gap, or we usually just call them an info gap, is it's one of the routines that the Stanford folks introduced to us that we just thought was awesome for all students. And so we tried to include about one every unit, sometimes more frequently, sometimes we don't get one in. But the basic idea of an info gap is that it's a routine. So students learn, you know, their different roles. There's two roles. There's the student who has the problem card, and there's the student who has the data card. And the problem card is like, Jenny bought some socks and shoes, and she had to pay some tax. How much did she pay? And there's no numbers. It's just like a problem setup, but the data that you need to solve it is missing from the problem statement. The student with the data card has that information, but it's not structured in the context of the problem. And sometimes there's additional information that's not needed. And the idea is that student with the problem card has to ask the student with the data card for specific information. And there's a whole structure around what kinds of questions they can ask and what kinds of responses the person with the data card has. And so if you go to the UL scale page, you can see more about it. There's also stuff in the teacher guide on ours, and then any activity that's an info gap has the word info gap in the title. So the idea is that students get to play both roles. There's always two sets of cards, so that everybody gets a chance to do the problem card, and everybody gets a chance to do the data card, and then they switch. Anyway, it's one of the ones we've gotten really great feedback from the teachers who piloted the materials, and we do them in our PD, and it looks kind of intimidating when you first see it because there's a whole lot of words, but once you understand how the routine works, it goes really, really well. No, actually, the student materials, that's right, the student materials don't show the problem on data cards, so that doesn't really help. It does say what the instructions are.
There was another question by Kathy. She said she's got about 7 days before she starts the sixth grade curriculum. Mm-hmm. Are there any suggestions with what she should do to prep to get started with the curriculum?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, I'm going to make a plug for actually doing the first unit first, because a lot of people look at the first unit and say, why are you doing geometry to start? That's not major work of the grade. But we really, really thought about it. We started all of our courses with geometry. And the reason we did that is because there's a lot of reasons why. One is that it levels the playing field. Most students come into class with sort of a self-concept of I'm good at math or I'm not good at math. And if the first thing that they see is a review of arithmetic, that just reinforces their ideas. If they were good at arithmetic before, they're going to be good at it now. And if they weren't before, they weren't now. And it just reinforces those preconceived notions. The geometry concepts at each grade level are starting at the beginning for everybody. It's new for everybody. And it really gives students an opportunity to surprise themselves and for teachers to be surprised of what they can do, because there is no sort of preconceived experience or notion of how they can do with that. So there's that. It's also because it's not major work of the grade, there's a lot more space for establishing norms and routines. So there's less pressure to get all of the details right off the bat, because you have some space built in. There's embedded review that prepares students for the more intense stuff that comes later. So the first thing is like, there's really a lot going on that's really setting up the year in that first unit, and looking at that first unit with that lens is a good way to get started on preparing. Yes, Jenna's got a great suggestion, which is like, do some of the tasks. I mean, you'd be amazed at the subtleties of what's going on and the kinds of, like, a lot of times you'll look at the tasks and be like, oh, I know how students are going to respond to this. But when you do it, you see all of a sudden that there's a lot more going on under the hood, and there's a lot more opportunity for different student strategies, and you kind of have to do it yourself. any other suggestions? We've got some people here who've given this a lot of thought. Sounds like every day of my teaching career. Yeah. Yep. And we actually have a whole bunch of teachers who are, I think, on Twitter who are using it. So I think you don't need to even come to us. And there's a lot of people that teach, some of the teachers from the pilots, I'm sure could be great resources. Oh yeah, Jen. Okay. So Jen reminds me that I need, so first of all, I wish Jen could talk for a couple minutes. Jen is the mastermind behind our digital activities. So if you're using the digital version of the materials, all of the really, really cool GeoGebra and Desmos applets was Jen's brilliance. And if you're using the print materials, there's actually a QR code and a short URL for all of the ones that have a digital version. So students can go, even if you're using print, you can figure out which ones have a digital version and you can send students to that. They're awesome. And I really recommend spending some time looking at them. They're really built specifically for, they're not generic things. They're built and engineered for that particular learning goal, those particular learning goals in that particular lesson. Yeah, the interactives are amazing. Okay, anything else we should talk about? Any questions? We're super excited to be able to share these materials finally. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into this, and we know they're not perfect. We're excited to get feedback from people so that they can get better over time. They're OER, they're actually CC BY. You can use them for any purpose. You can change them however you want. You can publish them in any way. It just requires an attribution. Well, the Monday was the official release, but they've been available for people who knew about them for several weeks. So, because teachers who've adopted started already. So they've had backdoor access. Yeah. Questions more? We pilot tested last year. Yes, we had 6 districts, and the data that I've looked at for those pilot districts, test scores went up even in a pilot year for most grade levels that piloted. So that's saying a lot. Yeah, I mean, I think if you contact info@openupresources.org, if you email them, I think they have some of that achievement data. Yeah, so I would ask them. I think they've got that put together in an official way. I don't have like the official thing you can share. I've just done my own looking. All of our pilot districts that are continuing with materials, either as an expanded pilot or adoption. So it's info@openupresources.org, I think. Ashley, do you mind? Yeah, finding that. I don't want to get it wrong. Well, you know where to find us. I actually have to tell you that I joined Twitter today, so you can actually find me on Twitter. Thank you. Thank you. I think that's it. I mean, I don't Perfect. Think anybody has any other questions, but you know where to find us if you do.
Yay. Awesome. Thank you for your awesome presentation and sharing a little bit about the background. That's definitely helpful and exciting. So we have, as a quick reminder, Global Math Department is every Tuesday, same time, same bat channel at 8 p.m. Central. And our next presentation next week on September 5th is Framing Math Instruction with the Task, Questions, and Evidence Process by Thomasina Adams. So it sounds like it's going to be a great way to help students uncover errors, prompt discourse, and reveal their misconceptions, and use that evidence to inform your formative assessments. So please make sure that you hop on, and remember that this recording will be available in about 24 hours. Thank you, everybody, and I'm going to stop the recording now, and have a great rest of your week.
Bye, everyone.